I'm here today with Lieutenant Colonel Walsh. Pardon me?
Lieutenant, not Lieutenant.
Okay. Lieutenant Colonel Walsh. And it's March 8th, 1985. I'm here in his home. And Colonel Walsh, I wonder if you could tell me where and when were you born? First of all.
I was born in Saskatchewan, the town of Imperial. 1913. My parents had immigrated between. My father came in 1908, and my mother arrived in 1912, and I was the only one in the family who was actually born in Canada.
Well, when were you born? What year?
1913, March 1913.
And could you give me, well, that's your brief family background, then. I wonder about your schooling, then. Where did you go to school, when, how much?
I spent most of my schooling in Imperial, although I did go to school for 2 years in Saskatoon. And also I spent some time in Milestone. These are all in Saskatchewan. And then I completed my education in Regina.
Did you go into cadet training?
No, in those days, as far as I know, there were no cadets training at that time, not to my knowledge.
Were there any other members of your family that were in the armed forces?
No, I'm rather the oddball of the group, because even my ancestors, I often think they came to Canada to evade the First World War. And as far as I know, only one uncle was ever in the forces.
Were you with the militia at all?
Yes, I joined the militia in 1930 in Regina, in the Canadian Field Artillery, as it was called at that time. It was a battery of four guns. And the guns at that time were 18-pounders, the same gun that they had used during the First World War. I was with them the entire, from 1930 right until the start of the war in 1939.
Those 18-pounders, they're a towed gun, aren't they?
Yes, they were.
By jeeps or larger trucks?
No, when I first went, they were towed by horses. The first two camps I attended, one in Camp Hughes, which is now, was disbanded in the early 30s. You know, we used to go and we were attached to the Royal Horse Artillery. They provided the horses and the drivers. And we were training with the horse artillery.
Were there any promotions in your unit? Did you get promoted well?
Oh, yes. I was immediately put on to an NCO's course in the fall of 1930, which was held in Regina. We went for 4 months and covered all aspects of artillery. The following fall in 1931, we were sent to Winnipeg to qualify, where we did the practical training and had a qualification as a sergeant.
Could you tell me a little bit about that training as an NCO, you said, with all the artillery?
Yes, we were a little strapped in those days because we were simply a battery. We had no means of towing our guns. We had the guns, the complete guns. We had all the harnesses for horses. We had no horses. We had no vehicles. So all training was really done in the armories or just outside. And we did various other things. We fired salutes for commemorations, as they still do today. And as a matter of fact, I was honored in 1935 by receiving King George V's Jubilee Medal. And in the following year, in 1936, I became the battery sergeant major of the unit, which I still was, held that rank when they were mobilized.
Could you describe the uniforms that you had in the militia?
Yes, right up until the start of the war, we were still wearing the uniforms from the First World War with the brass buttons and breeches and putties. And we had a big bandolier where you carried ammunition in. We wore that. And even at the start of the war, we still didn't have a decent uniform. We were still using the old stock.
What was your pay in the militia?
Well, when I first started, the artillery were high paid. They got $1.20 a day. The infantry only got $1.10. And that's another point. The first year I went to camp, I was lucky in winning the Gunlayer's Prize, which gave me $5, which is almost as much as I made all week.
What was your social life in the militia?
Well, we used to turn in one day's pay to the unit. We didn't have a great deal. We had dances. They used this money to bring in a few sandwiches, and they could get a three-piece orchestra for a few dollars in those days.
I wonder what weaponry did you use other than the guns? What the artillery?
There were a certain number of rifles, and we had some machine guns, which were also First World War Lewis guns.
Would the rifles be Lee Enfield?
Yes, they were.
Was there any other weaponry then, other than the machine guns of Lee
Enfield's? Not in the artillery, no.
What were your relations with the regiment and between the civilians and regiment, you know, the community?
When I first joined, there was a regiment, which was the 10th Field Brigade, but it wasn't active. And there were three sort of independent batteries who belonged to this regiment. There's one from Moose Jaw and one from the town of Aneroid. Plus the one from Regina, which I belonged to. But it wasn't until the mid-30s that a regimental headquarters was finally formed, but not very active.
What sports did you play in the militia?
Oh, we were quite active in playing softball, basketball, and that was mainly the one.
Well, September 1939, war breaks out. Now, this is where you were at the when war broke out with the militia?
Yes, I was still with the militia. As a matter of fact, I was called out on the 28th of August, and our unit was more or less, given orders they would be mobilizing. I think the official order came on the 3rd of September. We were actually called out before that.
What was your rank in 1939?
I was a battery sergeant major at that time, and the pay was $2.80 a day. Shortly after, they raised it to a whole $3.
Well, while you were in Canada, what were the conditions like as far as clothing and uniforms?
Well, for the first month or 2 months in September and October, we had a number of people who joined. We hadn't uniforms for them. We couldn't get boots for them. They were wearing their civilian shoes, and I think it was around November that the new uniforms finally came in, and we got everybody equipped at that time.
How was messing?
The units in Regina were billeted in the exhibition grounds, and they had these old buildings where they put up some big old furnaces in the middle of the floor for heat, and we had the mess halls were the dining halls that they used during exhibition week. We took those over, and so they were available there, so it was worked out pretty well.
How did you find the food?
Well, quite good. We took in fellows, cooks who actually worked in hotels, and that there was always somewhat available. Although most of these people didn't work out too well later on because they had difficulty feeding a large group.
And was there much in the way of entertainment or sports at the time when?
Sports were part of it all the time. We did physical training. Of course, our time in Regina was all during the winter, and couldn't do too much. We did have a hockey team, and we used to go out on route marches in midwinter, 20 miles or so, to get people fit. But otherwise than that, you're pretty limited for sports.
How were civilian-military relations in Regina at that time?
Well, just prior to the war, it was very bad. As a matter of fact, I can remember being in the militia in the 30s, going to the armies in uniform, and having their kids throwing stones at you and hollering, calling you warmongers and that. But once the war started, then everything changed. The same people were praising you then.
Yeah, that's fascinating. What was your pay at that time? Was that $3, as you mentioned?
Yeah, it was $3 at that time. See, even a captain was only getting $5 a day at that time.
Were you a specialist?
Well, I had been, yes. Before I became Sergeant Major, I had been a specialist. Yeah.
Was there any particular gun that you worked with as a specialist? Or other?
Well, as a specialist, I was with the OPIP, or the observation post, with the battery commander, and you had an artillery board, where you plotted all the firing on, you see. I did that for a couple of years, during the early years.
And was there anything else that you worked with other than that plotting?
No, I spent most of the time, I really became the gunnery instructor, the gun drill instructor, and I used to instruct the officers in gun drill. You see, after I'd taken my qualifying course as a sergeant, I was pretty well up to date on all these things. I used to instruct the junior officers when they came in.
What was training like there as... maybe as compared to the militia then? Any major differences between the two?
No. You see, at the start of the war, we still only had 18-pound guns. Mm-hmm. And we were organized as a field battery. But then in October, we decided... this was the start of the anti-tank. They didn't have anti-tank guns in the First World War, you see. And they organized two regiments of anti-tank. The first one was in Eastern Canada, and the second one was in Western Canada. we had the one battery in Regina, the 18th, and then there was the 20th battery from Lethbridge, the 23rd from Calgary, and the 108th came from Kimberley, B.C.
And were the maneuvers any different?
Well, yes, oh yes, considerably, but of course we had no transport, so that until we got to Shiloh, Camp Shiloh, in May of 1940, we had no means of doing any training by moving the guns.
So your Camp Shiloh, that wasn't your last move before going overseas, was it?
Yes, it was.
It was.
Yeah. You see, as I go back just a bit here, in October, once they changed us to anti-tank, we were finally given 1 2-pounder anti-tank gun, which is a very little effort with a high muzzle velocity, and we spent all a couple of months simply pulling this thing apart and putting it back together again. We couldn't fire it. There was no place to fire it until we eventually got to Shiloh, and then we set up a range where we had dummy tanks where they pulled them across on a cable so that they could shoot at them.
I see. When were you brought up to overseas strength then?
We were at overseas strength early in, about November for our unit. But then some other units went over in December. And we had to supply them with people to fill up these units, and I think we had about 20 left in our unit. Then we didn't do any more recruiting till just prior to going to Shiloh in May, and then we were brought up to strength then. And we trained in Shiloh from May until the middle of August when we started on our trip, and we went directly from Shiloh by train to Halifax. We didn't train in eastern Canada or any other place. We went straight to England from there.
So, concerning new recruits, did you get a lot of new recruits then, after that initial build-up?
Oh, yes. You see, they stopped recruiting there in midwinter. Why, I don't know that they did. And then it wasn't until May. I think the thing was that they built up the first division, sent them over. Then until the politicians decided that they wanted the second division over there, then they built up the second division.
Any new equipment at this point?
Yes, we had these 2-pounder guns. I think the regiment had 4 altogether, the whole regiment, so that we were allowed them for training for a couple of days, and then we give them to another battery. And that's all we had in Canada.
How were the relations between the ranks and the officers?
Oh, I think they were very good, yes.
Did you ever come in contact with the zombies?
Well, that was much later. See, the people who would have most contact with them would be the ones who were still training in Canada. The zombies didn't really come in until 1944, 43?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. We did receive some reinforcement zombies, as they were known as, just towards the end of the war. But we had very little to do with them.
Now, at this point, you go overseas to England to begin your training. Where did you go for your training? How strenuous was it?
Well, we landed in Scotland and came down by train, and place called Little Barracks, which is at Farnborough in Hampshire. It's very close to Aldershot, where most people know where that is. And we were there for about, well, from September to January. And during this time, we were doing training what we could. We were issued with gun carriages without without any barrels on. And we towed them around the country. The natives just wanted to know what they were. We set up a new secret weapon. And in the at nights, during the time of the Battle of Britain and into October, every night we had our regiment was allotted the defense of an airport, which is known as Dolly's Farm. And every night we went out there, stayed out, got into position, and stayed there until daybreak, and then came back. In January of 1941, we made our first trip down to the south coast to take over the guns on defense of the south coast. And we were there for a while, and then we went back to Little Barracks for a short period. Then we went back to the south coast. I might mention our area of defense at that time was Hastings and Beck's Hill, and on along to the town of Rye. And from that time on, we spent all our time in the South Coast at various spots. During 1942, there was a scare that there might have been an invasion. And at that time, we had our area was defending Pevensey Bay and Eastbourne, and that was the place that William the Conqueror had landed. And then we went on all various different places. This went on until actually D-Day, but of course I left the unit in 1942, the end of 42, to take a commission.
How long did your training last then? It ended when you took that commission. Did you do any more training in Britain after that?
Yes. Well, on this Octuos, we were sent up to, firstly, the Canadians had a 6-week course in a place called Borden. And this was where they really smartened you up, really were tough. As a matter of fact, things were so tough we didn't even make our beds sound at night because we didn't have enough time in the morning to put them up again. And following that, the officers, or we were then called cadets at that time. Officers in training. That's any officer who was married in Canada was sent back to Canada for training. Those who were single or married in England trained in England. And we've trained, our anti-tank training was done at a place called Ilkley in Yorkshire, which lasted for 4 months. There we didn't have any. It was strictly training. There was no spit and polish. They didn't care how you turned out because you were under training under actual conditions. Mm-hmm. And that we did battle courses
Could you describe the weapons that you used both before Borden and while you were in England?
Oh, yes. After the 2-pounders, they had, the next weapon that came out was a 6-pounder anti-tank gun, which we had, I would imagine, we got those in sometime in 41, I think. And they had those right up until close to D-Day. We had, and then they came in with this large anti-tank gun, a 17-pounder, which is the ones that we had later on.
Was there any other weapons?
We had, for local protection, we had Bren guns, and we had a 2-inch mortar, and also a certain, still had the Lee Enfield rifles,
mm-hmm.
a certain number for each battery. Each gun had a rifle and a
yeah.
machine gun.
And what was your specialty?
Well, I wasn't... Nothing particular, no.
You trained with all of those guns mentioned?
Yes.
How effective was your training? Did it prepare you for the action?
Oh, yes, I think so, very well, yes. I think that people like myself who'd actually had militia training plus 3 years in England, 3.5 years, were far more prepared for actual action mm-hmm. than people who came over there with only 5 or 6 months training. They just didn't have the training at all.
So you think it was really quite good?
Oh yes, we were well trained.
Was there anything humorous that you noticed while you were training? Anything that struck you as funny?
Yes, no doubt there were many things. Call right at the moment. I suppose the most humorous things were when people went on leave in England. When we first went over there, you could used to get a ticket for going on leave, and you could practically travel all over England on that ticket. They didn't seem to bother you if you were in the forces of okay. You could go any place. And then the people in England were extremely good to us. Very good. And they were very short rationed, as everybody knows. But, we were well looked after in England.
How long did you stay in England then before you were finally called to go over to the continent?
Well, I was there from September 1940 till October 1943, which is a little over 3 years. Yeah. Then we, after I completed my training for commission, I came back to a unit which is known as the 2nd Canadian Artillery Reinforcement Unit, and us fellows who were trained in England were all appointed instructors, and we instructed all the troops that were just coming over from Canada, and we were there from July until we left in October, and that's what we were doing, training the newer people, even the officers who came from Canada, because our instructors at Ilkley were actually officers who had taken part in all Montgomery's battle in the desert. So we had first-hand information on what really happened. Very beneficial to us.
And so this took place while you were in Algeria?
No, in England.
Or in England.
England,
sorry. And when you went when you went over to the continent, well, you actually didn't go there first, but to Algeria. How did you go? What was your mode of transportation?
Well, we went, unfortunately for us, we were loaded onto one of the Liberty ships, those were the boats that Kaiser built, where they welded them together. They were flat-bottom boats. We left from Scotland and went up and through the Bay of Biscay, which is a terrific, rough area. And I can tell you, most of us wished the ship had gone down for about 2 days.
What was the name of the ship you were on?
I can't tell you the name of the ship. I don't remember it now. But it was a Liberty ship. They made a number of them. And we sailed down, way down, and then into the Mediterranean by Gibraltar, and landed at Algiers, where we stayed for about a week there.
Could you describe for me anything that stood out about life aboard that troop ship?
Well, yes, there was one amusing thing. As I say, after we got through the Bay of Biscay and finally hit the Mediterranean, we were all feeling fit. And we went in to breakfast this morning, and there was a great big darkie who was the cook. We're all lined up, and he says, "How many pork chops would you boys like?" And we hadn't seen for years, these great big pork chops with about an inch of fat around them, and everybody looked at them and left. We just couldn't take them. But after a day or so, we got back to eating and enjoyed the rest of the trip. Took about 7 days, because we went away south, down as far as Dakar in Africa, and then came back up and in. They took us away into the middle of the Atlantic, you see, to keep away from spotting planes, I guess.
U-boats?
Yes. Well.
Now, your operations, what post were you assigned when you arrived in Algiers?
Well, I was still a training officer. And then we took a train trip from there onto a place called Philippeville, which is still in Algiers. Algeria, I should say. And very close to Constantine. And then four of us were attached to the British 6th Armored Division anti-tank unit. This is a unit that had fought with the 1st Army in Africa they came in from the west side, and then they joined up with the 8th Army of Montgomery's afterwards. And we spent 2 months with them training, firing guns. And,
any other equipment? What kind of guns? Could you go into that?
Oh, they were equipped with the rifle, actually. They had they didn't have the M10s. They had a British gun mounted. I believe it was on a Valentine tank, a British tank, with a British gun on it. And they had the new rifle, the Garland. I believe it's called the automatic rifle, which it had a clip with about 30 rounds in, and it was more or less really automatic effort. They were equipped with them. This is a weapon that we never got. We never had. following that training, we embarked to Italy, landed in Naples.
Was there any change of rank before you left for Italy?
No.
So at that point, you're still a battery sergeant major?
No, I was a lieutenant. I went to OCTU, I became an officer.
Oh, yeah.
Lieutenant.
Okay, so what unit were you with, still that unit, when you went into
it? Well, we were with the reinforcement unit. It was called the 4th Battalion Reinforcement Unit. And we went, in Italy, we went first to a place called Atropolda, which is near Avellino. And this is where all the reinforcements were held until they were required by the units who are actually in action. I was called up in February joined the 7th Anti-Tank Regiment, having, and I met them at a place called Guardia, which is right at Ortona. Now, there had been the big battle at Ortona with the 1st Division, but this was just after the battle. It was under very heavy shelling, and I spent about 3 weeks up there, and they shelled us for 2 or 3 hours every day. It was shelling. You just had to keep under cover. Not that nobody was attacking or moving or anything. It was just stationary. Then I went back and was called back and went back to Atropolda for about 2 days. Then I returned to the 7th Anti-Tank and took over B Troop, which was the senior troop in that 104th Battery. Mm-hmm. This was the battery that had come from Fredericton.
So where was your first action with the 107th? The 7th?
After that, we went back and did some more training, and two of the batteries of the 7th Anti-Tank then turned in their towed guns, which were 17-pounders and 6-pounders, and got the M10 gun. They went into action at the Casino. They were very involved in the Battle of Casino. We still had towed guns at that time, and we brought up the rear, and we weren't really involved in the action, but we were right behind them. Mm-hmm. Once the Battle of Casino finished and the Germans pulled back out of Rome, then the 104th Battery were equipped with M10s. And of course we had to do a fair amount of training on this new equipment. The M10 was an American gun mounted on a Sherman tank. The only difference between the M10 and the Sherman tank itself was that it didn't have a turret. It had an open turret. So you stood up and you looked out, right out, all the way around.
And
following Casino, everybody was given a chance to go and visit in Rome. As a matter of fact, three of us officers tried to get in there at the start. The Americans wouldn't let us in, so we had to wait for about a week. And then I took one group up, and we had audience with Pope Pius, which I'm not an RC, but unfortunately we didn't have any Roman Catholic officers in the regiment. Mm-hmm. And two of us volunteered to go, which was a very, very nice experience. Following that, we were until September.
Could I just, for a moment, ask you about that casino action, and maybe you could describe a little bit of that for me?
Oh, yes. We were in a position where we could see exactly what went on. We saw the American planes come over and bomb the monastery at Casino on the hill, flattened it completely.
Would these be larger bombers, or would
they used the
B-24s?
Yeah, I guess
the B-17s.
The large flying fortresses they were.
Oh yeah. Oh, that would be B-17.
Yeah, B-17. That's what they were. Yeah. And they came over and bombed that. The town of Casino itself. Troops had been in there all during the winter of 43, and there's absolutely nothing left but a few walls, and that's all. You can think of with a wipe that off. There was, the valley was heavily mined. As a matter of fact, one of our batteries lost a number of fellas, one or two killed and a number injured from mines in that valley. As they hadn't been particularly cleared, they had cleared pathways to get through, but not the entire park. It was a very tough battle for those who actually were involved in it. Although it didn't last that long, it was over within. This particular battle was over in about 7 days, I think. Of course, the troops had been at Casino since the year before, trying to get in there, but they couldn't get through until they finally put on this. And Montgomery was in charge. We were part of the 8th Army at that time. Yeah. Montgomery was still in charge, and he lined up all the artillery he had, and they pounded the place all day and night before they put in an attack, and then they were able to get through. Although they still had some pretty tough fighting.
A lot of heavy losses?
Yes, there were. There were a lot of casualties. I am not sure how many were killed, but there were a lot of casualties. Because that was my first experience. One of the batteries in the 1st Anti-Tank Regiment were badly mashed up, and my troop was sent up to relieve one troop. But this was just as the battle had ended, so that when we got into action, the actual battle was finished at that time.
How did you feel, excuse me, how did you feel about this being your first action?
Well, anybody that isn't scared not telling the truth, because you really are scared. But you have a job to do and you do it. But you definitely are scared, yes. Definitely.
How was morale?
Good. Oh yeah, morale was good.
After the battle?
We had one or two fellows who just wouldn't go or couldn't go into action. They just couldn't go. And, well, they had to finally put them in place behind, you know. But very few. I only know of two in the regiment we had.
And after the battle, how did most of the people feel about that?
Oh, morale was still good. We realized that time that it was only a matter of time that the war was going to be over, because Rome fell on the 5th of June, D-Day was on the 6th of June, and then we realized now we're coming to the end of it.
I wonder then, could you continue on from after that experience you had in Rome with the Pope?
We had a period then until until September, when we went into action, really the first real action we went in as a unit. And that was at the Gothic Line. It was, we were right in action. The Germans at that time didn't have very many tanks in Italy. So that there wasn't that much firing, actually, at tanks. But what we did, we supported the infantry right up close with the infantry. We knocked out machine gun posts for them, and wherever there was a build-up in the houses, we knocked down an awful lot of houses, you know, and it was a great assistance to the infantry. But as far as shooting at tanks, my troop never did actually fire at a tank.
Not in the action on the Gothic Line.
Not action, no. Although we were right up there.
Was that November 1944?
No, this is September.
September. Okay.
And then this, we were in action then right on through until February of 44. We went into the front line. We came out, but we were never that far back. You know, you had a reserve unit going in, and you one in and one out.
You said February of 44?
Yes, 44.
Well, this other action you mentioned was, you said, September.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then we went up to,
so that was September of 44 and February of
45.
Yeah, okay.
Now, after the Gothic Line was broken, there were a number of battles, one at the Mariano River, which is a very bad little battle for about 2 days. I was at that time attached, my troop were attached to the 4th British Division, and they took very heavily casualties. As a matter of fact, their officers' group, where they're holding their orders group, was entirely wiped out by a 9.2 gun that the Germans had. They had two of these railway guns. They only fired them about once a day, but they would take a whole building down wherever they landed. And this was well, it was a bad time. There was a lot of shelling, a lot of mortaring, and we were under fire all the time. We went up, forward to fire at, we were all ready to fire at a couple of Tiger tanks, and at the same time we were just going to fire at them, the two planes, Typhoons they were called, came down and knocked out these two tanks before we got a shot at them, so this was the only chance we'd had. Following that, we moved over to another area, and at that time I, as a troop of the 7th Anti-Tank, a core unit, we were involved in supporting wherever support was needed. And following leaving the 4th British Division, I was sent over to the 5th Canadian Division, and we were at Coriana, which was a very bad battle as far as the 5th Division was concerned. The Irish Regiment lost a considerable number of people. We did a lot of firing there into a village,
you don't remember the name of that village?
No, I don't. It was very close to the